Welcome to Aspen Leading Edge. I'm Patty Roberts at St. Mary's University School of Law, and today's guest is Katarina Leuenbach. She is a professor of law and director of international programs at the South Texas College of Law in Houston. She's also a double Fulbright Senior Specialist grant recipient and started her career before teaching as a practicing attorney at Baker & McKenzie. So welcome, Professor Leuenbach.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really honored to be here. And it's so great to see you, Patty, always.
Always, yes. Well, it was so much fun meeting you two summers ago at the Aspen Leading Edge Unconference, where 25 or so leaders in legal education are invited to talk about the issues that are most on their minds. And I was absolutely blown away by what you were doing at the time, post-COVID, to try out additional tools to teach your students in a more effective manner, not only because of COVID, but just pedagogically, finding some additional tools that would engage them more with the material. So can you tell us a little bit about how you approached using interactive assessments and tools for the pandemic, but then what you built on that you learned in the pandemic that you're still using today?
Sure. I'd be happy to. Well, I think we all remember when pandemic started in March 2020, and we were basically told on a Wednesday, I still remember that very well, that school is going to be closed. And as of tomorrow, we're going online. Well, most of us, if not all, myself included, have never had a Zoom account. And we didn't really know what that all means. It was terrifying to just suddenly feel that you don't know how to do your job as of tomorrow. And it was a tremendous learning curve. And I still remember and feel so grateful for my understanding students who were online, and I was teaching a class of 90 plus, and asking them whether they can see me and trying to ask them to help me find the camera and things like that. So I was not that far off from the guy that said, "You're on, I'm not a cat," but I want to represent my clients. So the remainder of that spring semester was a full nightmare, and surviving it was not easy. But when that was over, I kind of was determined to get good at this, no matter what was going to happen. I did not want to experience this type of fiasco once again. So I spent the summer working with a group of students that I put together that consisted of my research assistants, some of my former students that I know just are terrific, bright, and engaging. And I would meet with them twice a week to talk about what would be exciting in a law school classroom. And we were looking at and testing every possible material that we could find out there. And there were a lot of new ones coming out. And our horizons were being expanded at the moment because I've never seen these materials anywhere. Long story short, once we were down to a few different innovative tools and options, I would think through it myself and then ask the student group to vote on which ones they would like and why. And ultimately, I came up with a list of interactive tools that I then worked on through the next ongoing 2 years as I was teaching different courses and getting feedback as I went along, implementing them into different courses and learning from that experience, which ultimately made me feel so much better as a professor because I actually kind of created everything on my own. It took a lot of work, but once I got there, I started owning it. And it just was very exciting to get to that new level. So at the moment, I have various tools I use in different classes, from Practice Perfect videos, Charter Course, Casebook Connect, and et cetera.
Well, I love that the motivation was fear and uncertainty. And you just said, no way, not again. I'm going to figure this out. I mean, that's tremendous. How many students were in your student evaluation working group?
I had a group of three and a group of five, and they would meet in those groups, or so I guess eight in total, but I would talk to them individually. And Some of them were the loyal 1Ls that survived my dramatic spring semester and were still there to support me. And others were the students I had from before in 2L and 3L classes. And I actually ran into one of them who is part-time and he's just graduating now. And he took some of my other electives in the last semester. And I thought it was hilarious. He said, gosh, Professor Leubach, I can't believe I still remember you when all you had was a casebook and a water bottle. So
that's funny. Well, now you mentioned among the tools that you found really helpful were Practice Perfect videos and also Casebook Connect. And I know those are two features that Aspen Books have. And you have an Aspen book, Connecting Ethics and Practice, A Lawyer's Guide to Professional Responsibility, that just had its third edition come out. So tell us a little bit about that book and why it's different from the other PR books on the market.
Well, originally, as I was working on this, this was really a method for teaching professional responsibility that ultimately turned into this book. And then from there, I kept developing it. But what I was thinking included a few different things. First, I wanted to make professional responsibility real. I know a lot of students to this day, I think less so now than it used to be before, but a lot of students think that ProRes is some course they're stuck with and they have to just get through it and they will never need it again. And it's common sense and ethics is boring and all of those things. Well, I actually, prior to teaching, part of my practice involved representing lawyers in legal malpractice cases, defending them. And I have a lot of passion for professional responsibility. And I always think, geez, it's a course about the profession. It's a course about who we are. It's our job description that includes our principles, our ideas, right and wrong. And it's not that obvious. Many times it's counterintuitive to what you think is the right answer. So when people say, I don't really care to learn about that's just strange to me because I think it's so fundamental to just being an attorney. So my goal was to make it more relatable, more applicable, and to make students understand that that's one course they will need forever. In fact, I always say I teach a number of different courses and I keep in touch with many graduates. And I get all kinds of calls and emails as we stay in touch. And nobody asked me torts question 2 years after graduation. Nobody has done that. Or citation question or anything else. But I get calls when somebody's voice is shaking. They're like, Professor Leubach, I don't know if you remember me, but I think the partner is asking me to do something unethical and I don't know what to do. So anyway, these situations, issues, and challenging moments are very real. And to make that happen, I wanted to use cases, articles, examples, and scenarios in the book and in my course method that are very relatable, something the students can remember from the news, something they see around. In fact, I asked them to do group presentations on a topic of legal ethics that's very current and very important in their opinion. Every lawyer and law student should know about, and they can choose that topic and they can together prepare a presentation for the rest of their classmates. So I was looking for cases, examples, scenarios, articles that I think involve our daily reality, not something from, you know, many years ago, which I think for this course, it just doesn't do the job, in my opinion. Next, I wanted to create a logical structure and organization that would allow the students to be prepared for the MPRE by the end of this course. And there's so many rules and the topics are all over the place. So I was thinking of what would be a way to organize their process in terms of how they're learning. And I came up with a way that I think is helpful. It's starting from the moment that you are sitting in the seat in law school right now and hoping to get admitted to the bar, from that day, what will your life be like if you decide to develop a solo practice, which actually a lot of our graduates are going to do now. There will be more students going into smaller practice and solo practice than big firms in today's reality. So first, you would have to know the rules of bar admission. How do you behave properly and make sure that there are no red flags there? Then you get admitted to the bar. Great, congratulations. Well, now you want to start your own practice. So what do you have to think about first? how do you advertise? How do you get clients? Then, you know, maybe you can get clients via your pro bono work and or judicial appointment and et cetera, et cetera. And we go all the way through this timeline up to sale of law practice. Now I'm done. You know, let me retire, so to speak. But so the combination of modern examples with logical time frame, and I actually got permission from the NCB to use released MPRE questions, and we practice them as we go along. And the book and casebook connect, it's all one workstation that kind of, that's all the students need to follow along with this method. And so they learn with this timeline, and when issue of conflicts comes up, for example, then they can kind of remember what was the sequence of learning, how did we learn it, and hopefully they will remember the applicable rules and how to apply them. And also in Casebook Connect, they do problems and exercises after each chapter. I can track their progress. They can track their own progress to see how they're doing in relation to the class. And also I like to use mind maps for visual learners, so they can kind of remember how the concepts relate to one another in terms of the rules and concepts and professional responsibility. And also do some practical things like learn how to bill your time. We do a billing exercise so that students can take 3 days to bill their time. And they usually come back saying two things. Gosh, this was painful to keep track of time. And next, I can't believe how much time I'm wasting. I actually thought that I'm a very productive person.
Oh, that's the interesting thing. Yeah, that probably happened to all of us.
I'm going to reorganize my day completely. Anyway, in all of that, once we cover it all, sorry for the long answer to your question, we wrap it up with mindfulness chapter and discussion of sanity and well-being, which so many people, unfortunately, are lacking in light of all the pressure that we have in the legal profession.
Well, I love the definition you give of the course, in that you think it's a definition for practice, that it's a job description and also our values. What an interesting frame of reference for our students to make it more interesting than just pass the MPRE, right? And then how you have organized it so logically, from applying to be a member of the bar all the way through sale of the law practice with some modern examples. That sounds like a really interesting way for our students to learn professional responsibility. And it is counterintuitive. I've taught it before, and I think of myself as a very ethical person, and that doesn't really mean anything when you're taking MPRE questions.
You know, on that note, I tell them, we kind of work on it in some topics, and the rest of it, I tell them, create a template for each scenario. Don't expect the law firm to tell you what to do. You are a grown-up and professional attorney, so you should have a template. What do you want to make sure you cover during your intake? And what do you make sure you advise about? Even if they will say something doesn't have to be in writing, ask yourself, do you want it to be in writing? Just in case, right? When I worked at a law firm, the head of our practice group used to say, when you draft the letter, and that maybe is really dramatic, but he said, when you draft a letter, envision it being turned into a huge exhibit in a legal malpractice case against you. Is it going to help or hurt? So it's kind of crazy way to look at it, but your work product basically is who you are in terms of being an attorney.
Oh, how true. It's a sobering way to look at it, but I think a useful way for sure. And you do mention that, or you did mention that the last chapter pertains to mindfulness and well-being. And I know you've had a really good student response to that chapter. Can you tell us a little bit about what you've included and the kinds of responses you get?
Well, how do I summarize it? This is kind of a big topic, and I never expected that I would be teaching mindful learning class. That all sort of happened, and very quickly, the way it came about was that I'm a first-generation immigrant, first-generation American, first-generation lawyer, and I'm a very hardworking person. Hardworking to the level of really overdoing it. Overkill is kind of my challenge my whole life. And at some point, I worked so hard that I led myself to a very serious burnout that was lasting a long time, and I just couldn't come out of it. And long story short, prior to that, I always just believed in discipline. I just said, you know, any problem, stop complaining, work harder, get up earlier, and all of that. And that experience of just looking for my own self that used to love what I do and not feeling so, in the class, I always ask the students, what is burnout to them? And it's kind of interesting how they say, I just give up, my brain stops working, I feel checked out, and all of that. So I went through that myself. And as I did, I had to figure out a way out and kind of rescue myself. And I had to be open to things other than just get even harder on yourself and keep criticizing yourself more. So I ended up attending a meditation retreat that ultimately was a lifetime saver. And that was over 10 years ago. And since then, I started meditating on a regular basis. And as I started meditating, I started feeling more awareness and noticing where other people are at. We always tell our students, you have to understand your audience, right? To be successful at anything. But we have to understand the audience too. And how do you achieve that? Through more awareness. So through that practice of meditation, I started noticing how incredibly stressed the students are. Prior to that, I was just focused on the material and getting stuff done. And suddenly I'm like, what is happening to the students? They are so stressed, overwhelmed, exhausted, nearly giving up. And we started talking about it during my office hours. In addition to the questions they had about the course, I would say, but how are you doing? How are you managing? And suddenly they were so grateful that somebody asked them about that. And long story short, I started my research assistants, started meditating with me, that other students joined. And then over time, I basically created this course called Mindful Lawyering. And in my professional responsibility, I have one chapter in the book and I just introduce the students to it. But ultimately, it turned into a whole course of using mindfulness meditation technique and breathing exercise in order to develop more awareness, to be able to get to a calm place when you feel especially stressed and overwhelmed, and then take these skills and over time apply them to law practice. And we do exercises that pertain to mediation, client interview, and all kinds of different legal skills with and without mindfulness technique. And it becomes kind of apparent how helpful that is. So I didn't know how that was going to work out, but amazingly, students just really need that. And I've had a full wait list for this class everywhere, every time I teach it. And I kind of realized that in addition to just training the students on the material, we're also the coaches and mentors. And we have to give them a coping mechanism for all the stress that legal profession is putting on them. And they have to learn something that's better than the horrible statistics that we see about the legal profession, including 68.7% of law students needing mental health help, and 43% being depressed, and suicidal thoughts, substance abuse, anxiety, all of that. And that's from the 2021 survey of law student well-being. So I always tell them that's not the only method, but that's one method that I personally found very helpful and a lot of people found very helpful. And now I have my students that learned the method come back and talk to the current class about how they used it during bar prep and how they were able to calm down through that or during final exams. And then some lawyers that I know that practice mindfulness technique also come to either PR class or mindfulness or mindful lawyering class. And it's everywhere. People don't realize that it's no longer this. There's some misconception that comes along. You know, I always say it's not about being a yogi sitting cross-legged on top of Himalayas. I mean, that'd be nice, but
that would be nice.
That's not expecting it, so to speak.
So it's exciting that you're getting such positive responses from students and that you consistently have a wait list. How large is the class when you teach it?
We cap it at 20. So it's a smaller class because we do a lot of group projects and practice exercises. So for it to be effective and also have the conversations that we have, I mean, sometimes it could be a few more students, but I'm reluctant to make it a really big class because I feel like it's not going to have the same level of connection.
Sure. I can see that. And it seems to me that this mindfulness approach that you're teaching students would be very consistent with the new professional identity formation standard with the ABA. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. Well, forming and developing professional identity takes a lot. And there's so many components to that, from understanding what you're trying to accomplish, where you want to be, adding value in the legal profession and in our society, the mentors that you want to find. But ultimately, I feel like the opening moment to the professional identity is awareness. Where are we at right now? And kind of understanding that a lot of our thoughts, and most of them are negative for most people, unfortunately. I always ask the students, how many of you have this inner voice that's complimenting you all day long, like, great job, you're looking great, you're so smart, you're so successful.
Well, that's hilarious. Are there any students that
have
any professors for that matter?
Nobody ever raised a hand, you know? And also the other thing that shocked me, I always ask the students consistently, how many positive people do you know? Meaning someone whose presence is gonna make your day bad. And I don't mean positive in the sense like fake smile, I'm great and all that. But people who are generally seeing the best in life, offer shared good positive energy and kind of believe in success or whatever you take on. Just overall having discussed something with them is going to be from neutral to good versus put you really down. So I ask them, how many people like that do you know in your life? Not necessarily limited to lawyers. And I'll take your guess. How many do you think students say? Uplifting people.
Two.
You're pretty close. I would think there should be more, but over the years, there is 0 to 4. That's my survey result, which I think we have to change that. I keep reminding them that it's a privilege to be an attorney. It's not a punishment. You should enjoy the journey. That's a big part of it. But getting back to professional identity, I think the beginning of the concept starts with awareness. Where I'm at, what I'm trying to achieve, and also understand that these negative thoughts, they're just thoughts. They're not facts. I don't have to be controlled by them. I can ignore them, and I can continue my professional development in so many ways. So I think the starting point is even to just even ask yourself all these questions. Where are you at? What are your goals and hopes and aspirations? And who are the people that could be so important on your journey? I know, Patty, we both had people like that, and we're very fortunate. We know one of them.
Yep.
Jim, right?
Jim Moliterno, yep. Just retired from Washington and Lee University School of Law.
So I guess that's kind of the hope, that through that process, we can find our positive force within that will remind us how fortunate we are to have this opportunity to be able to become an attorney and to serve our community, to offer so much to others. And if we don't have enough positive people in our list, let's start from ourselves. Let's become the first positive person the student that's at zero can start the list with, right? And that's already something.
So changing that narrative, I imagine, is helpful for all students, but especially, I bet, your first-gen students or your students who suffer from imposter syndrome.
That's right. You know, it is really surprising. I'm working on an article right now about imposter syndrome and actually how to use mindfulness technique to try to first acknowledge that that's what the problem is. So it's not reality-based, it's just the perception of your own creation that you don't have to be controlled by. So I give the article, it's in its draft phase right now, to different students and different people to look at. You will be shocked. Almost everybody taking the test says, I have it.
Oh, I have it. I mean, I don't need to take a test. I know that sometimes I feel like, oh my goodness, can I really do this? And of course I can, and I am. But your narrative is not, great job, wow, you're so amazing, as you indicated earlier. So I think it's common, I think, among my colleagues, at least that I have talked to about this.
And I think someone like yourself saying it out loud and admitting it is incredibly helpful to students who think, oh my God, Dean Roberts has it. Like, what does she have to worry? I am not sure about myself, like whether I'll survive the next week or not. But, you know, I can only imagine what it's like to be in her shoes. That must be amazing.
And then she too is nervous when she gets up in front of people to talk and that kind of thing. Yeah, it's I do try to share that with students so that they understand that it's something I think we all face at some points in our life, depending on the circumstances. But that is really exciting. And I know that our students here at St. Mary's appreciated the mindfulness and legal education course, and that you've done panels at SEALS to teach other professors how to do this work or incorporate this into their teaching. So before we conclude, I have one more question, and that is, where do you see the future of legal education in the coming decade? I mean, I feel like we have grown in so many ways, both because we wanted to and because we had to these last few years. But how about this coming decade? How do you see legal education changing?
Well, I think it is changing tremendously in a very fast pace. I've been teaching at South Texas for 18 years. And prior to that, I was at DePaul University Law School for 3. So I'll say in my, I guess hard to imagine, 21 years of being a part of legal education, I would say tremendous changes have happened in the last 3 and almost 9 in the previous 18, which is kind of shocking. So I think, at least the way I see it and being part of this journey and the transformation, legal education went from being very rigid and very much the same for a very long time to now suddenly being completely shaken up and changing so fast that I think even people who are really known to be on the cutting edge, they also feel they can't keep up with the changes. The changes are just ongoing. So I think even though the pace is really hard, overwhelming, and exhausting at times, I really think we're in a better place than we were before all these changes. So I think the change is from more rigid to more flexible, and the momentum is catching up to becoming more and more and more flexible. So I think what we have right now is shifting the focus towards, again, meeting the students where they're at, instead of them just having to do what deal with whatever we're putting in front of them, right? So it's getting to be more focused on individual learning styles, more focused on students' needs, how they want to learn, what is most helpful to them, where they want to be when they're learning, including the online programs and assessments that help them. They don't want to wait 6 months to take a final exam, and we have to adjust. So I really, the best I can guess, I think it's going to become more and more flexible and more student and individual focused. And there has to be some balance at some point, but I think with all the pain and challenge that we have to deal with on our end, I think it's a good thing. And ultimately, it's making us better teachers, more insightful educators, deeper people, hopefully, because we're not just thinking of what I want to do. We have to understand what is best for the audience. And that's what we basically teach our students from day one, understand your audience.
Well, I have no doubt that regardless of what legal education has in store for us in the coming decade, you will roll up your sleeves and you will figure out how to do it best for your students, just as you did with mindful lawyering and professional responsibility and learning interactive virtual teaching, right? So very impressed with how you've just decided you're going to take the bull by the horns and figure it out. So hope you will keep doing that. I'm sure that you will. Thank you again for sharing the information about your Connecting Ethics and Practice, A Lawyer Guide to Professional Responsibility, 3rd edition that just came out. I hope people will consider using that for a unique approach to teaching PR to our students, and for sharing the mindfulness in legal education and the profession, not only chapter that you have, but also the course that you're teaching.
And it comes with very extensive teaching materials.
Ah, good. That's good to know. Excellent. Well, thank you for joining us, Professor Leuenbach. And if there's anybody who would like to learn more, you can reach out to her at South Texas. And if you want to hear from other legal educators doing cool things, please listen to the podcast, Aspen Leading Edge, that you can hear on from their webpage or from Spotify, Amazon, Google, and Apple. Thank you, Professor Leuenbach.
Thank you. Appreciate it. much.